I didn't need to lie, because he was already lying to himself. Out loud, constantly. All I had to do was not interrupt him.
You're not that kind of woman,
he told me the first night we stayed late at the office, the air thick with printer heat and bad coffee. He closed my laptop like I was a child who'd worked too hard.
I almost corrected him. That instinct still existed back then.
The reflex to clarify, to disclaim, to be clean. But I felt something sharper underneath it. Curiosity. What would happen if I let him finish the thought for me?
So I stayed quiet.
I let my face soften. I let him feel perceptive. He smiled like he'd solved a puzzle, like he'd earned something.
That silence was my first test. Not whether I could deceive him, but whether I could benefit without ever asking. Whether I could let him construct a story where he was generous, noble, in control, and I was simply the reason. After that, every favor came wrapped in his own language. I want to. It's nothing. I'd do this for anyone. He used those phrases like armor. I let them protect him. Omission feels harmless when you're the one practicing it. It feels like restraint. It feels like innocence. But when you know exactly what someone wants to believe, silence becomes a tool.
And I knew. I was 29 and newly hired, which meant I looked competent while barely holding my life together. The job sounded impressive. The pay wasn't. My rent ate most of it, and my student loans picked up the rest, like scavengers. I never complained outright. I didn't have to. Stress shows on the body, whether you name it or not. He was my director. Married. Two kids. The kind of man who liked to be seen as reliable, ethical, steady. He volunteered for mentorship programs, stayed late for the team. People trusted him because he worked at being trusted. The first favor was small. My train line was down. He offered a ride. I said, "You don't have to." I meant it literally. I didn't say please. I didn't say I needed him. I just stood there, with my bag digging into my shoulder, waiting. He insisted. That mattered. It let him feel like the decision was his. In the car, he asked questions that sounded polite but carried weight. Did I have family nearby? Was I settling in okay? Was I managing? I answered carefully. My mother lived out of state. My last relationship had ended amicably, which was easier than saying I'd been cheated on and blamed for it. He got quiet, jaw tight. You shouldn't be stressed about basic things, he said, angry on my behalf. I didn't agree. I didn't argue. I let him sit with that feeling. After that, the help multiplied. Lunches, rides, a gift card left on my desk with a sticky note telling me not to argue. When I tried to return it, he smiled like I'd passed a test. You're proud, he said. I respect that. He started asking what I needed. I never answered directly. I'm fine, just tired. It's a lot right now. Vague words, flexible words, words that invited interpretation.
He began interpreting aggressively.
I could float you, he said one afternoon after finding me in the stairwell, breathing through a bad meeting. Just for a bit. No one needs to know.
I felt the moment settle, the pivot point. I could have stopped it. I could have said it was inappropriate. I could have said no. I said, I don't want to be a problem.
His relief was immediate.
You're not, he said.
That was when I understood. He didn't need permission. He needed silence shaped like approval. He needed me not to disrupt the version of himself he was becoming. So I didn't. Once the money started, everything changed. Not externally, but internally. My life got easier. My groceries improved. My shoulders relaxed. And beneath that relief was something darker. Satisfaction. I had been right about him. I had read him correctly. He narrated the situation constantly, as if language could sanitize it. This isn't what it looks like. I'm just helping. I want to do this. He said those things more for himself than for me.
I let him talk. Silence gave his explanations room to breathe.
The favors expanded beyond money. Better assignments. Introductions I hadn't earned. Praise that landed just a second too late to be professional. When he told me I was talented, his eyes lingered. He liked believing he'd discovered me. The first kiss happened in an elevator, after drinks with the team. Everyone else had left. His hand brushed mine.
He looked at me, waiting. I didn't step back. That pause. That was it. I didn't invite him. I didn't refuse him. I let him translate my stillness into consent. His mouth tasted like whiskey and panic. When he pulled away, he whispered fuck, like it meant both desire and absolution. After that, he needed reassurance. You'd tell me if I crossed a line, right? He'd ask, half-joking. I said, you're a grown man. It sounded respectful. It wasn't. We started meeting privately. Hotels booked on points. Gifts wrapped like secrets. Lingerie I was told I didn't have to wear. He talked about his marriage the way men always do when they're trying to justify betrayal. Cold wife, lonely house, misunderstood heart. I listened. I didn't suggest anything. I let him convince himself I was different. When he asked if I cared, I didn't say yes. I kissed his jaw. I said, I'm here. He offered to move me into a better apartment. Safer. Closer. He framed it as protection. I said, that's a lot. He heard, yes. I told myself I wasn't taking advantage. He was choosing. He kept saying so. My morality became a grammatical trick. If he volunteered, I wasn't exploiting. If he assumed, I wasn't asking. But omission doesn't stay contained. It escalates. It demands more. And he kept escalating, trying to keep up with the story he'd written about himself. The first crack came from something stupid. A calendar invite sent to the wrong email. Client prep, scheduled off-site. It flashed briefly on a shared view before I deleted it. People started noticing patterns. The access I had. The money I didn't worry about anymore. The way he hovered, one night in his car. Hands shaking, he asked, "You're not telling anyone, right?" "No," I said. That part was true. "I'm doing this because I want to," he said quickly. "You know that, right?" This was the last exit. The clean one. I could have stopped it. I said, "I never made you do anything." He exhaled like I'd saved him. Exactly. The exposure didn't come from carelessness. It came from overcompensation. He bought me an expensive designer bag. Too visible. Too traceable. He wanted proof he was generous, not desperate. 2 days later, his wife walked into the office. She was calm, controlled. She looked at the bag on my chair and smiled. "It's beautiful," she said. "He has good taste." Then she placed her phone on my desk. Emails, transfers, hotel records, screenshots, HR, CC'd. He tried to speak. She stopped him. "You didn't have to say a word, did you?" she asked me. "You just let him assume." I said it, the sentence I'd relied on. I never asked him for anything. She nodded. "Of course." HR moved fast. He was put on leave. My accounts were audited. My advancement collapsed under scrutiny. He called me that night. I didn't answer. Speaking would have meant owning it. A week later, I signed my resignation. Quietly. Efficiently. I walked out expecting relief. What I felt instead was recognition. Silence had never kept me clean. It had just delayed the moment everyone could see what I'd done.